With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu, speaking to you after Toronto Raptors lost on opening night. You don't say that very much. With a 113-99 loss to the New Orleans Pelicans. Yeah, not great, not great. The last time the Raptors lost on opening night was like 7 years ago, which is a long time. And yeah, it's an unfamiliar feeling for sure. And honestly, it's weird. It's a weird feeling because the way the Raptors lost tonight, I think, you know, there's lots of things to point to. I think there were some disappointments there. I think there are things they can get better at. But the weird part is the Raptors were doing quite well throughout the first, you know, I don't know, 2.5 quarters. They were doing solid. I mean, look, they had a 9-point lead. And whatever, man, a 9-point lead is a 9-point lead. It's, you know, it's not like you're going to hang your hat on a 9-point lead in the NBA in the third quarter, right? But at the same time, I'm just saying the flow of the game, the Raptors were doing well. They're making the right plays. They were, you know, they were, I thought defensively they had a better game plan for what they were doing than what the Pelicans were doing. They looked a little bit more experienced. And I really had no complaints. It looked like the Raptors. And quite frankly, the Raptors should have had a double-digit lead coming out of halftime. But they let Redick get open for three a few times too many. And that was a constant three throughout the game. I mean, I can't believe this man had 23 points. Although I can, because, you know, some of the guys guarding him were not up to task. You know, the Raptors in that third quarter looked like they were going to put their foot on the gas pedal, you know, build a double-digit advantage, and just sort of just keep that. Defensively, I thought they were sound. But what happened was, okay, so one, three-point shooting. The Pelicans made, like, a stretch of, like, 9 of 10 threes. At one point, the Raptors were just 0 for 8, 0 for 9 in that same stretch. So that's going to swing a game, absolutely, when you miss that many threes while the other team makes a lot of threes. You know, you could chalk some of it up to bad defense. You could chalk some of it up to Stan Van Gundy making some halftime adjustments after seeing what the Raptors did in the first half. The Raptors had a lot of success in the first half. The two guys you want to take care of on the Pelicans are Brandon Ingram, and you want to make sure you keep a lid on Zion Williamson. The way they did that was, you know, classic Nick Nurse fashion. They really aggressively trapped Ingram out top above the three-point line. And force him to pass the ball. And then on the other end, for Zion, they, you know, they tried to feed him in the post a lot, the Pelicans. And the Raptors had OG Anunoby on him, and also they had Fred VanVleet digging in a lot. Hard post doubles that, again, either force Zion to give up the ball or play against two, which, you know, is never good. So, you know, that was the game plan. I think the Pelicans kind of adjusted a little bit. You know, I think they, because of how much pressure the Raptors are sending to the ball when those two Pelican stars had it, that led to some pretty obvious adjustments in terms of where the Pelicans were, in terms of making extra passes, making early passes. You know, when you look at Brandon Ingram having 11 assists, that's got to be close to a career high for him. And, you know, he was able to solve the defense in addition to scoring himself. I mean, he was quite good today. Best player on the floor. But yeah, that three-point shooting stretch was just wild. And honestly, there were some three-point shooting variants that went into that. I'm not saying the Raptors played excellent defense. I don't think so. In the second half, the Raptors' defense was not good, especially in that third quarter where the Raptors lost 38-22. However, that does include shots like Brandon Ingram hitting two super contested jumpers, one where I'm pretty sure Norm fouled him, and then, you know, Ingram kind of flailed his arms to try to draw the contact, still made the shot, no call came. That's a very difficult shot. Another one where Pascal stretched up all the way on Ingram. And, you know, Ingram's obviously very long, but Pascal is also very, very long. That's a heavily contested three that he made. You know, Eric Bledsoe, it was part of the game plan to leave Bledsoe a lot to help. Obviously, the Raptors knew that from the 2019 playoffs, where, you know, that strategy proved wonderful against the Bucks when the Raptors swept them. However, Bledsoe today, 4 of 8 from 3. And honestly, when the game plan specifically designs for leaving Bledsoe open and letting him shoot with this light contest, and he's making them, that's where it really hurts, because that actually breaks your back, because then you have to change what you're doing. Bledsoe hit, you know, hit 4 threes today, 4 of 8. Every single one of them felt like, you know, a 10-pointer. And then, like, the worst part about it was Lonzo Ball had a step-back 3 in transition, which, I mean, I don't know, man. That's a little bit unbelievable, quite honestly. But, you know, that stretch there, that 3-point training stretch, really got the Pelicans to, you know, A, erase the Raptors' 9-point lead, and then to take their own lead. Now, the thing is, it's not like the Raptors are completely out of the game, right? As we knew from last year, the Raptors were never out of any game. They made a lot of comebacks. They had a lot of poise. And, you know, at a certain point, the Raptors are like, all right, enough is enough. And then they make their run and they make their push. That just didn't happen today for the Raptors. You know, the Raptors, were down 9 points to start the fourth quarter. So it's manageable, right? The Raptors cut that down to about 5. And, you know, it's a 5-point, it's a 5-point disadvantage with, you know, 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It's a very manageable game. If you're the better team, you should come out and get that. The thing is, I thought the Raptors just kind of played sloppily. Like, I didn't think they played with cohesion. I didn't think they played with a lot of trust. You know, and there were a lot of instances where the Raptors were just trying to, like, single-handedly shoot themselves out of the stretch. Anytime anybody made a three, which was rare, but anytime anybody made a three, the next person, that person was jacking up the next shot. And the flow of the offense wasn't quite there. You know, and there were some signs of, like, visible frustration as well. You know, when you had Kyle Lowry come into the, you know, they showed him on the bench, and he slapped a chair. You know, they formed that little huddle and on the court with the chairs and everything like that, and Kyle Lowry just slapped the chair. And, you know, you could tell he was frustrated. You know, this was a frustrating game. I totally understand where he's coming from. You know, there's another instance where the Raptors are trying to inbound the ball. I forget if Kyle was the inbounder, although they probably was, considering he usually inbounds. And now that Mark's not here, Kyle's going to have to inbound even more. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, like, he was trying to inbound. Pascal was got post position, you know. He didn't fully have his man sealed, and eventually, you know, the play went on for too long. The pass still went to Pascal, and it became a turnover. I saw Kyle being visibly frustrated there, too. And he checked out of the game a little bit earlier, although he played 39 minutes, so, you know. Maybe he just checked out because, you know, you shouldn't be playing Kyle 39 minutes, at least on day one. But yeah, I mean, you know, there were just points of frustration. I think defensively too, like, the cohesion just wasn't there. Like, they kept making mistakes. Kyle was not, you know, not entirely guiltless there too. I mean, at one point he left JJ Redick to help on a drive by Brandon Ingram, where Brandon was pretty bottled up. I mean, if Brandon Ingram's driving, yeah, it's a problem, but it's not that big of a problem that you need to leave JJ Redick one pass away. You should never leave JJ Redick one pass away, because that's a way bigger problem than whatever else you got going on. Unless it's like Zion dunking the ball. Don't leave JJ, man. And that happened. Another instance where Norm helped off JJ Redick in the corner, and JJ Redick hit the three, kicked his leg out, got the and one as well. 4-point play. That was tough. And, you know, that was bad. You know, when you look at some of the play, you know, in terms of the way the Raptors were covering, first half, they had a really good game plan. Second half, I didn't think they adjusted that well on the fly. To what the Pelicans were doing. And, you know, you had back-to-back plays where, one, Brandon Ingram comes off the pick and roll, Aaron Baines is dropping back, and Ingram hits the mid-range shot, okay? Ingram was hitting that mid-range shot throughout the game. And that's, you know, a cause for concern, sure. But the next play, Baines then, this time, changes his approach, no longer backing into the paint, comes out to the perimeter instead, and, you know, that completely leaves Steven Adams wide open on the roll. Brandon Ingram being like 7 feet tall, essentially, can just pass over. I mean, Ingram's taller than Baines to start with. Gets the pass through to Steven Adams. Steven Adams rolls uncontested in for a dunk. So it was not, there's not a lot of cohesiveness. You're not going to make a comeback without any cohesiveness. You're not going to make a comeback without a lot of trust. And that's where the Raptors were today. I mean, you expected them to make a comeback. To be honest, it seemed like they had weathered the storm. The Pelicans bench was coming in, the Raptors bench. They were playing well in the first half. Maybe they can do something. they could not. And the Raptors just, you know, played from behind for a lot of that, you know, third quarter, a lot of that fourth quarter, and that was it. I mean, it was, you know, it was a shitty way to start the season. It really is, because, A, it's frustrating to lose when you had control of the game, but it's also, it just sucks because it does reveal some actual flaws with the Raptors. It doesn't feel like it was last year, where, of course, the Raptors played the Pelicans, and the Pelicans gave the Raptors a really great game last year on opening night. As you remember, on ring night, the Raptors had to go to overtime. You know, they had to hit some big threes to hit the overtime. Pascal had an outrageous game. Fred had an outrageous game, and the Raptors were able to win. That wasn't an easy win by any means, but I think what we saw last season was the Raptors were just able to essentially roll the ball out and get going. They hit the ground running with a great start. The Raptors have consistently done that over the years. That's why this is the first time they've lost on opening night in almost a decade. And whether it's the circumstances, whether it's the fact that, you know, they're playing temporarily in Tampa, whether it's the fact that they've lost two pieces in Serge and Mark, whether it's the fact that, you know, you know, guys were not necessarily, like Kyle, for example, didn't play the first two preseason games. Or, you know, the fact that Norm Powell apparently had some sort of COVID scare. He doesn't have COVID. He tested negative when he played today. But the fact that that scare kept him out of practice in 2 days. Or the fact that it's just a new group. I'm not totally sure, but they did not look as smooth as you would expect from the Raptors early in the season. And that continuity just doesn't feel quite there, which is a little bit odd because they are returning a lot of players, but, you know, some of them just weren't performing. But I thought, you know, individually there were some decent performances. I thought Kyle in the first half was excellent. Second half, not so much, forcing a lot of shots, driving into traffic. I mean, I don't know what you're expecting driving into Steven Adams, but you're just going to get knocked on your ass and you're going to miss the shot because the guy's, like, you know, a giant. You know, I thought OG forced his offense at times. You know, he missed some open threes. But I thought defensively he did really well against Zion. You know, that's... Zion had 15 points on 7-9 shootings. You might say, well, that's okay. That's not bad. And it's not bad, but I thought OG played one well throughout the course of the game. You're never going to stop Zion entirely. He's, like, ridiculously strong and athletic. The best analogy I saw for Zion was someone described him as a fridge filled with dynamite. I remember reading this back when he was, like, his first year with Duke. But, yeah, that's exactly how he plays. But, you know, Zion had 6 turnovers. I thought OG played him decently. It's a very physical battle for sure. And, you know, there was some help there from the Raptors guards. But for the most part, you know, I thought OG did well on Zion defensively. Missed some shots. Forced some shots, which is the part where, you know, I think it's a nice... You got to keep OG in mind, because if he only does the dirty work and the grunt work defensively, then that's going to wear on you. I think, you know, you do need to feed OG occasionally. Now, he didn't have the legs to make the shots today. That's okay. But it's very hard for OG, I think, to only stick to that role. I mean, realistically, that is his role. And that's why I was always skeptical of, like, an OG, like, breakout season in terms of, like, a huge jump in the statistics. I don't really see a different pecking order in terms of who's going to get the shots, let alone the skills and everything like that. Forget all that. Just, like, the pecking order was going to stay the same. And OG was still going to be the fourth option in the starting five. But, you know, it's still, I mean, you know, look, if you're battling Zion all the time, maybe you get a couple of looks offensively to feel good. OG did come on stronger in the second half for sure. It felt like he didn't get a single look in the first half. Second half, he got a few more looks. He missed some wide open threes, but he also ran the floor well, cut well, filled in the lane, you know, got a reverse dunk to drop. All these things are good. But yeah, I mean, you know, OG played his role. I think it's okay. Pascal, obviously, is a big focus on Pascal. First half was really, really good. Game overall was fine. Like, it was good. Like, 26-6 is pretty good. A 6 assists is very promising to me. I think the Pelicans definitely sent a lot of attention on him. To be honest, what I'm seeing these days is that every single team is overplaying Pascal. Whether that was, I mean, it's only been like 3 preseason games and literally day one, but the Hornets overplayed Pascal. The Heat definitely overplayed Pascal. The Pelicans overplayed Pascal. They're just sending extra bodies at him a lot. And so he's going to have to hit a lot of jumpers. They're really going to force him away from the paint, and you would want to see his paint efficiency go up again. There were some instances where he was able to use his length, you know, in transition, for example, you know, whether he was coming off cuts. But for the most part, defenses are completely locked into Pascal. It's hard for him to get into the paint. And he's going to have to do other things. And one of the other things he's going to be doing is assisting, because teams are always going to be loading up on Pascal. So he can find the open man. That's going to be very important. I thought Pascal ran the break well a few times leading the break. He's always been a very good transition player, so I'm not worried about that. That's normal. But even in the half court, one who's getting doubled, making quick passes, getting guys open, the six threes is, or six assists is it's a number that I would expect to see closer to the norm. I don't know if I expect Pascal to average six assists right away, like doubling his assists, but I expect the assist number to climb, and he was good on that front. He hit his threes, which is good. It's just the bread and butter of course. Well, what makes Pascal so great as a player is, well, offensively at least, is the fact that he can get into the paint. And right now, defenses are completely locking him out of the paint. So he's going to either have to hit a ton of more threes or really, really start to rack up the assists to really change that equation. But for the most part, I thought he played well. Only one or two shots I thought he forced. You know, there was one where he tried to drive on Steven Adams. Again, you know, if Steven Adams is in position and he's at the basket, you better be dunking on this man, because otherwise, or kicking him in the balls like Draymond, because otherwise, I don't know what you're going to do. He's probably going to stop you. He's huge. You know, Fred had a little bit of an off night, some foul trouble. I thought his third foul was really, really unfortunate. Ingram pushed off on a drive, and for some reason was called on Van Vliet. So that A sent Van Vliet to the bench early in the first half. That Kyle had just subbed out of the game. Fred was coming in. And that foul quickly reversed that. Kyle had to come back into the game. Fred had to come out. That broke his momentum. He missed some open threes as well. You know, got his layup blocked by Lonzo. But, you know, Fred was... he wasn't as impactful as you normally would like. He had some nice moments where he got into passing lanes. Three steals, you know, was nice, but didn't make the impact that you want from Fred. To be honest, just didn't have the momentum that you would normally expect from him. And the steadiness, the foul trouble really hurt him there. But in terms of some of the positives, I thought, you know, A, Baines, it's not a great game from Baines, I wouldn't say, but he did have 11 points and nine rebounds. It's a good matchup for him, sort of a similarly style of player in Steven Adams. Adams is a better player for sure, but Baines can do some stuff too, especially with the three-point shooting. But Baines, I thought, was good. Defensively, you know, he's not going to anchor your defense. Like, he's not going to tie everything together and erase tons of mistakes. But he did play the scheme quite well in the first half. Second half, not as well, but to be honest, the Raptors kind of got rattled and didn't get their defense sorted out at all. But yeah, I thought, you know, offensively, it was intriguing to see this game from Baines. I think, you know, a lot of the stuff that we know he can do, he did. You know, he had a little push shot along the baseline, which was kind of cool. It was like, I don't know, like a 10-foot push shot. Didn't know necessarily he had that in his game, him playing in the dunker spot. I'm still maintaining what I thought earlier, like what I've said a few times already in the three preseason games, is that I'm a little surprised Baines is... A, involved so much on the on-ball screens. I understand Baines is a very good screener, but he keeps screening and then rolling into the paint, and that just congests the paint even more. It would create opportunities for guys to shoot and score, but once there's not that separation to pull up for guys like Fred or Kyle, then Baines should, instead of trying to roll into the paint and clear out a lane and seal a guy or whatever, and he's good at doing that. You know, pretty much all the Celtics bigs who have, or at least... he's not a Celtic big anymore, but he was former Celtics bigs. You know, a lot of those guys have that in their system. But at the same time, pop out to the perimeter. The spacing for the Raptors is just poor. There's a lot of congestion. And, you know, that's going to continue happening to the Raptors. And I would like Baines to come out to the three-point line a little bit more. One thing that's a little bit... I'm trying to keep my eye on it. It's a little early in the season to really critique too much, but Fred and Baines seem to have absolutely zero chemistry whatsoever. Takes Fred, I would say it naturally takes Fred a little bit of time to build chemistry with a guy. You know, for a while, Fred and Serge didn't have good chemistry. And then last season, it finally kind of clicked for the two of them and they played well together. But it did take some time. You know, I think 18-19 that season, Fred and Serge didn't really click at all off the bench. But Fred and Baines so far, I've not seen anything promising in terms of the two of them involved in the same play just about yet. And it was interesting to me that the Raptors started using Pascal as the screener for Fred, while Baines kind of lingered in the dunker spot or on the perimeter, more so in the second half. I mean, I always think Fred and Pascal play well together. I think they should play more two-man game regardless. Baines with the three-point shot can be just a spacer. He doesn't necessarily have to always screen. But it is kind of interesting because it is a style change. Mark never rolled to the paint. He was always screening and then staying at the three-point line. So that pulled the center away. That helped the Raptors get a little bit more to the paint. Baines is obviously known for his screen setting and his paint play. So, you know, that's disappointing, but so that's natural for him to be doing what he's doing. But I think that's an adjustment the Raptors have to make in general, is just, you know, clear the lane, because, like, again, man, the Raptors just aren't really gonna be able to get to the paint that much. Like, today they shot 46 threes and only had 12 free throw attempts. That's quite poor. You just don't want to see that ratio. As much as a three-point shot is valued, and I'm literally telling Baines to go to the three, so I'm not trying to contradict myself, but I do think that Ed Baines can pull a center out of the paint, which is what he's supposed to be bringing as a three-point shooting center, then there will be more opportunities for guys to attack the paint. And right now, I don't think that's kind of defeating the purpose a little bit. But I generally actually liked what I saw from Baines. He took a charge, you know, was physical on the defensive rebounds, you know, had made several extra efforts that sort of tipped out in one possession for the Raptors. So, you know, it was solid, and he is just a solid presence defensively around the basket. The second unit I was actually really intrigued by. Norm was bad. His decision-making was bad. This was an old Norm performance, not a last year's Norm performance. I mean, he hasn't looked good at all in any of the preseason games, so I'm not necessarily surprised that he was poor today, but yeah, it was bad. You know, yes, he missed some open threes, but which, I don't know, I guess you expect him to make, because last year he was a knockdown shooter, but it was his decision-making that was kind of poor. You know, one play that really stands out, Norm and Fred were working a little two-man game. You know, Fred had created this driving lane and dished it out to Norm, and Fred had relocated for the three, was wide open, right behind Norm. Norm, you know, has the blinders on, throws up along the baseline, a little flip shot, contested, didn't go, and, you know, like, it's just, decision-making was poor with Norm. I do wonder how the loss of Gasol will affect Norm. I feel like the two of them got pretty good chemistry, and yeah, Norm has just not been good in preseason or today. Hopefully it turns it around, because he's actually going to be a pretty important piece, because the Raptors are going to be looking for him. He's pretty much he's not the first option, but he is one of the primary offensive options in the second unit, and if he struggles, then the whole unit's going to struggle. He needs to make better decisions with the ball. You know, he got fouled. Yeah, okay, a lot of those were transition runouts, and that's good. I mean, Norm is good at transition, and those are important. He had 8 free throw attempts. The whole Raptors had 12, so that is important. I'm not going to knock that, but at the same time, over the flow of the game, especially in a half-court setting, offensively, Norm has to be better. Especially because defensively, Norm is just not good. Last year, I thought he approached average, which was okay. You know, he got decent at on-the-ball defense, which was nice to see. Off-the-ball defense in terms of rotating and everything like that. I would never say Norm has been a standout there. But yeah, Norm was poor today defensively, man. One of the reasons JJ went off for 23. Although, honestly, you know, part of JJ going off for 23 was also he was guarded by Matt Thomas, who, you know, we would like to be him to be mini JJ. You know, Matt talked about, yeah, he got into a workout with JJ in New York during the offseason. You know, they worked out together for about a week. You know, Matt wouldn't necessarily say what they specifically worked out on, but, you know, Matt was okay. You know, 9 points, 4 assists, 2 steals, 3 of 6 from three, or 3 of 6 from the field, 3 of 5 from three, missed a mid-range shot. You know, that's solid production for sure. But I think, honestly, you know, in terms of the skill set and everything like that, Redick just has, like, this, like, asshole gene in him, man. Like, he really loves to, like, hit shots, preen. He has this, like, villainous quality. I think, obviously, being a super hated player at Duke helped with that. Don't know if Matt has that kind of aggression or even venom in him. And I'm not saying that necessarily that's like a huge skill. But if you're going to be a scorer, you do have to kind of have that kind of confidence. It's a night and day in terms of the confidence that Redick has, even against Thomas. I think Thomas is like low-key, if you listen to his interviews closely and what he says, he is a little bit cocky himself. But it's very, very different levels, I think. But I mean, honestly, Matt showed some promising signs today. You know, he beat Redick a couple of times, which was nice. We'll see if that lands him on old man in the three. But yeah, Matt was fine. You know, the four assists from Matt was promising. Again, he's been pretty good decision maker with the ball in his hands and pretty good at moving without the ball. So I'm pretty happy with the fact that Matt ended up winning the eighth spot in the rotation. You know, if you look at pretty much the way Nick wanted to set his team up, or at least what he said in preseason, he wanted someone to come out and win that eighth man spot. And if you look at the way the minutes were distributed today, the three guys off the bench, Norm, Matt Thomas, Chris Boucher, that's it. Bembry came in for some defensive duties, but played 6 minutes ultimately, and some of that was garbage time. So that's your eighth man, and Matt has become that eighth man. And it's really just a matter of bringing this kind of effort consistently. Like, you know, I don't know if it's unreasonable to ask for 9 points and four assists with 50% shooting off the bench, but I'm, you know, also expecting that. I don't know, man. I have high expectations, and that's not even that high of an expectation, really. Like, 9 points, four assists, like, as a backup guard, you know, it's standard, right? So I'm hoping to see this as a norm for Matt, obviously with a couple of games where he goes off. And then, honestly, the guy I was most impressed with off the bench is Chris Boucher, man. Chris struggled in preseason. Definitely, I was planning to write about Chris. You know, I really thought that this was going to be a big year for him. He obviously had the biggest change in role from last year. No Serge, no Mark. Boucher gets a new contract. He's given the spot as the backup center. And in preseason, he was just making so many mistakes. You know, it was kind of the same old stuff. And you're like, damn, I mean, like, don't blow this chance, Chris. Today, this was an example of Chris seizing the opportunity. 12 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, 6 of 8 shooting from the field in 15 minutes, highly productive. And I thought he played really well. I thought he had a good matchup against the Pelicans bench guys, whether that was, you know, Nicolo Mealy or whether it was Jackson Hayes. You know, Boucher plays well against those types. Those guys don't play with any physicality. Hayes is a guy who can catch lobs, but, you know, Boucher is stronger than him. So that's actually a rarity. And then Mealy is just a guy who shoots threes, but, you know, I mean, yeah. He's like, you know, he's like a Matt Bonner type, you know, and Boucher played well. And what was really surprising to me was Boucher playing in that short roll situation where instead of rolling hard to the basket, which is what Boucher is known for, obviously catching lobs, finishing, drawing fouls, the Pelicans were sagged back in the paint. So Boucher made a lot of smart plays by not rolling all the way into the paint, but stopping short around the elbow area and making a play. You know, he hit, he hit this ridiculous bailout shot clock buzzer beater, which was nice to see. But he hit a mid-range jumper after that. He hit a little push shot under control. And if Boucher can play under control, on top of the fact that he's incredibly athletic and quick for a center, with some actual skills to score, then you are really looking at a player who can be in your rotation without hurting you. You know, there are going to be mismatches for sure, although that's really up to the coach to sort of manage those mismatches by shifting the minutes around when you need to. But yeah, I mean, Boucher was good, and I'm very, very intrigued, you know, by what he did today. I think this is not outside of his capabilities, just like I thought Matt, you know, I don't think this is unreasonable to expect 9 points and four assists from Matt on 50% shooting. I don't think it's unreasonable for me to expect like close to, you know, 10 points and 2 blocks from Boucher, especially given the right matchup. And I thought Boucher played well today. Honestly, could have played a little bit more. It was interesting to me the Raptors closed already with a small ball lineup. They went to a lot more switching. That was obviously with Norm in place of, you know, Baines as the center. To be honest, it's a look, I guess, but you know, I was a little surprised to see it in game one. I'll say that. I'll just say that much. I think that kind of points to a little bit of desperation. That was something that the Raptors all year last year saved until the last moment. I mean, they literally didn't play that lineup until game 6. against the Celtics, and they needed to do that to win. But yeah, you know, it's gonna really tax your main guys to go that small. Not only are you asking them to play a lot of minutes, but you're asking them to do a lot defensively. And whatever, man, it's just the game. You play to win the game, and you need to do the job that's in front of you. If you're losing, you need to play your best lineup, and I don't blame them for that. I don't blame Nick for that at all. I was just a little surprised to see it on day one against a team like the Pelicans, who don't necessarily have the kind of Celtics, you know, roster makeup where they play small. They don't play that small. Brandon Ingram is huge. Zion is huge. Those in huge in different dimensions. You know, Ingram is... You know, Luigi, and Zion is more, you know, Mario. And then, of course, they have Steven Adams, who is, like, you know, also gigantic. So, you know, going small against them, I don't know if that necessarily does it, what you necessarily want from your small ball lineup. But, yeah, it's interesting to see, obviously, in game one, you know, you got a sense of where the coach really thinks of the team and what their strategies are going to be. And, yeah, the strategies are just what they are. I mean, people might be disappointed with Malachi Flynn not making the rotation. I think it's not entirely surprising, considering the fact that you have Kyle and Fred, who are going to play all 48 minutes at point guard. And as much as we like Malachi, he's not better than Fred or Kyle at point guard at this moment. And so he's going to have to play a little bit of two. And Matt's playing well at the two. Norm has not played well at the two, but Norm has a lot more staying power with the team. So it's going to take a while for Malachi to crack the rotation. I still have him cracking the rotation because I genuinely believe in the two-way skill set. But yeah, we'll see. Unless Nick expands the rotation to nine, that's going to be hard. And honestly, even if he does expand the rotation to nine, then what you're essentially doing is... make your team even smaller by introducing another small guard to the lineup, because Matt and Norm are also small guards. But also B, you're limiting the amount of time Kyle or Fred plays, which again, Malachi would need to be as good or close to as effective as those guys to get extended runs. So I do think by midseason it'll happen. But early on, I'm not totally surprised that he didn't crack the rotation. Terrence Davis didn't crack the rotation. You know, and the other guys, I'm not entirely surprised they didn't. So, in terms of your three stars from this game, for the Raptors, first star, I'll give it to Pascal, honestly, man. I didn't like the way Kyle played. You know, it was a little bit out of control, a little bit teetering. I think Kyle maybe had the bigger impact, but I honestly thought Pascal played a little bit more under control. 20 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 8 of 17 shooting, 3 of 7 for 3. Only 2 free throw attempts for Pascal. I didn't think he was aggressive enough going to the basket. And he had 4 turnovers. Some of those were not great. Raptors as a whole turned over 20 times. So that was a global issue. But I thought overall Pascal played his game well. He played his role well. My only complaint is just, like, as the game goes on, especially when the Raptors need a momentum-breaking play, they usually always force-feed Kyle for it. I would expect Pascal to share in that responsibility. It felt like Pascal's prominence in the game diminished as the game went on, which is not supposed to happen. So I want him to do better there. But by all accounts, especially after all the worries and stuff coming into the game, I thought Pascal played perfectly acceptable to good game. 26-6. It's really not bad with 50% shooting and 3 threes. Second star, I'll give to Kyle. 18 points, 10 assists, a rebound, and a steal. 6 turnovers for Kyle. Some of that was just him trying to force the issue. Kyle played well. First half, he was quite good. I think defensively, he could have been a little bit better. But I think as a whole, the team wasn't that great in terms of trusting each other defensively, especially after the Pelicans made their run. But Kyle was good. He was frustrated. He was mad. His patience will be tested this year. But, yeah, I don't know. He also makes, like, $33 million. So, how impatient can you really get? And then, in terms of your third star, it's going to Chris Boucher. 12 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, 6 of 8 shooting off the bench in 15 minutes. You know, there's still small things. There will always be things to nitpick with Chris. And it's really just, like, how you view the glass. Is it half full, half empty? With Chris, you know, he's going to make mistakes sometimes, right? Like, I thought Josh Hart was bricks from three all game. And one instance in the fourth quarter where they're trying to make their push and come back, The ball rotated to Josh in the corner. Boucher did not close out under control, ran and left his feet and bit really hard on the pump fake. I didn't think Josh Hart wanted to shoot. Josh then was able to get the driving lane baseline, got the and one, and converted. That was a huge momentum backbreaker. Boucher also took an ill-advised early shot clock three, which I don't think is really part of what the Raptors want from him this year, especially not in the game where the Raptors are losing. So that was unfortunate. But on the whole, he brought a lot of positives to the game, brought a lot of energy. And if he could play like this for the second unit, I would be thrilled. So in terms of your Gerald Henderson Award, that's got to go to Eric Bledsoe. He was just making so many threes. The four threes, again, are just absolute backbreakers. The Raptors designed and schemed specifically to leave him open. So when he does make those shots, it's going to kill you. And it felt like it was killing the Raptors. So that's unfortunate. But yeah, I mean, look, the Raptors lose game one. It is what it is. Raptors got to, you know, sort out their Christmas plans. It's super weird to start the season and then for the Raptors to be in Florida all this time, then randomly go back to see their parents and their families, and then come right back to play. Raptors play on Boxing Day 26 against the Spurs, so they have 2 days to celebrate Christmas, hopefully erase this game, and honestly, try to get the win, man. I mean, it's weird being under 500 right off the bat. It hasn't happened for the Raptors a lot. The Raptors haven't been under 500 in the first half of any season dating back to like 2014, so this is strange. But you know, it's a bit of a transition year. I think, you know, the team has talked about how they need to play a little bit differently. They're adjusting, and you know, there's definitely things to adjust. I don't think this is a super healthy performance today, just like I didn't think it was a super healthy performance against the Heat. But still a lot of good players on the team. They can kind of figure it out. They got a good coach. Figure it out, guys. In the meantime, you know, happy holidays to everyone who's celebrating, you know, whatever everybody's celebrating. Really appreciate everyone for listening to the show. Rate, review, subscribe if you haven't already. You know, share the podcast. You know, tell your Raptor friends about this show. You know, appreciate everyone watching on YouTube, listening on the podcast feed. And yeah, so the Raptors will be back on Boxing Day. I will be back on Boxing Day. Until then, everyone, happy holidays. Please stay safe. Please don't gather and spread COVID. Take it seriously. And yeah, I'll talk to everyone in a few days.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.